Easter is early this year, but that doesn't stop me from talking about fucking Lucio Fulci. This is The Resurrection of Fulci, Easter, March 31st, 2024.
Smoke will make you choke. Deep in the heart of Jersey and the city rats run in big packs. Deep in the heart of Jersey, oh, the parkway man takes the money from your hand. Deep in the heart of Jersey and old Route 17, the traffic there is mean. Deep in the heart of Jersey. City skies ain't fit for flies. Deep in the heart of Jersey, Route 80 West goes through the best. Patterson, New Jersey, oh, the dumps in June ain't like perfume. Deep in the heart of Jersey, but it's my state, I think it's great. Deep in the heart of Jersey. Deep in the heart of Jersey. Deep in the heart of Jersey. Yippee-yay!
Every Easter I sit down here and I talk about this. I've been doing this almost 10 years with this episode alone. Even on the years when Vaughn was first born and I wasn't really podcasting, maybe once a month, I would get off my ass and record this episode because I know people like listening to it because Fulci has such a varied career, right? You know, originally working to be a doctor, finding out that filmmaking made more money than doctors, decided to go into filmmaking with one of his first films made in 1959, and then up to his last film. A film that I really like, Door and Tour to Silence, released in 91, but I think was made in 89, around the time of his death. And a large swath of films. Some people refer to him as a cinematic anarchist, and I can't disagree with that. Because if he made comedies or sex comedies, spaghetti westerns, horror movies, he pushed buttons with the films he made. The two films we're going to do, the only two films that he made in 1985 were For the Apocalypse. And I can't find the cover now. Shit. Hold on, I just lost my fucking... Yeah, what the fuck is going on? Okay. Fuck me. Excuse me for the title of this, I fuck it up. The Demonic Womanizer Constantine Nakasa, or Dracula in Bronza, a.k.a. Dracula in Provence. If you want to find this online, it's on YouTube in a really weird copy, like third generation VHS with Indonesian or Israeli subtitles burned in. But it's still a good version because it's in English dub. For the Apocalypse is readily available. You can go on Amazon Prime and watch it. You can find a physical copy, I think, through Blue Underground. It's definitely worth your time. Both these films are worth your time. We're going to do this in release order from what I've been able to kind of look up through doing a little bit of research. And For the Apocalypse is first. Let me give you if you're the first time listening to any of these, let me give you a little overview on Fulci. Lucio Fulci, like I said, director, writer, overall kind of mad gorilla. Was born in 1927, died in 1996, complications of his diabetes. Made 57 films. Was a writer on a good amount of them. Starred in a number of his films as kind of a Hitchcockian kind of walk-on. Started his time as an assistant director. And also produced some of the late era stuff that he'd work on. Some of the kind of more kind of stuff. But anyway, Fulci was a guy who was an Italian, but had staunch and strict ideas about his people, right? Strictly the kind of ideas with his Catholic, with the Catholic insanity that the country had. He was also known as a grouch and a fucking horrible person to work with. From what I've read and interviews I've read and watched, he was not a good guy to work with as an actor. He was not. He worked good with the crews, but as an actor, he was a fucking tyrant. To the point where there's some actors and actresses who don't even want to talk about the films they were on with him because it's such a bad time. But they made such good films. Check Jennifer O'Neill in The Psychic from 1977. She doesn't like talking about that film because she had such a bad time making that film. Anyway, like I said, the two films we're doing today is from 1975. We already did the film that follows after this, My Sister-in-Law, a couple years ago. And there are a bunch of films after before this that I have to dig into. And I think there's maybe one or two films in the kind of ether of the high-end shit. I'm all done with the horror stuff. Except for like maybe like one or two fucking horror movies from his time periods. But I'm pretty much done with all the horror stuff. If you're looking at any horror films, you got to go back and listen to the other episodes. Another thing about Fulci is that I consider him a workman director, but he was just like every director who worked in the field of directing in the Italian film industry. If you didn't have the clout, like stuff like Fellini and Pasolini and others, who could go out and make whatever they wanted, the kind of crop of other directors, you're gonna put Argento on his own, because Argento had his father and his cousins and his brothers to fucking foot the bill, so he can make giallos all his life. Fulci did not have that. Did not have a benefactor. He had to work within the system. And he made films, like I said, of what the popularity was. So he started out in comedies, and he made his way out to Polizieteschis, westerns, sex comedies, and into horror near the end of his career, because that was big in the late 70s, early 80s. Tonight we're talking about two of the kind of, in the time of the mid-70s, what were popular, which was sex comedies in Italy and westerns. And that's what we're going to do. So first up, from what I've been able to find on information that I went looking through, is that For the Apocalypse was released first. You'll notice that a couple of people from this film were the first times working with Fulci, who would continue to work with him over the years, and they actually worked on the same film after this, and Dracula and Bronza. So why don't we get to For the Apocalypse? There's a great trailer I can find. And we'll talk about that. Why am I looking for this fucking thing? Their empty water bottles again.
make up your mind. All your fools outside the store. Now don't you know what's going on here? So many friends, little baby will be born.
They were four outcasts with a single purpose: survival. Stubby Preston, professional card sharp. Clem, the drunk. Bunny, a cheap prostitute. And Butt, the crazy.
They're gonna get us, man. Oh my God. They're gonna get us!
Got any objections, Clem?
It's okay with me. I don't even remember my own name.
Murder, rape, robbery, or all three of them?
I'm a friend of all the dead people. I see them all the time. Sometimes in the nighttime, and sometimes in the daytime.
As they headed toward the west, spurred on by the promise of freedom, their trail crosses with that of another outcast, Chaco, a professional killer.
See how Chaco shoots?
So let us pray together now.
Stubby, a fancy dresser, and polite as you please, finds himself torn between the will to survive and revenge.
This is the second time, I swear it.
Someday I'm gonna kill you!
Clem, his fool's paradise became a hell. Bunny, she discovered love for the first time. But fate was to cheat her of her happiness.
Stubby, I love you.
Stubby! Look over there, Stubby!
But he lived in a world of dreams that became a nightmare.
Ah! Sheriff Taylor died by a cleft skull, one of his own horses.
I could kill you right now, but I won't. Because I want you to die slowly.
So let us pray together now. Yes, let us pray together now.
You can't ever tell. Take it. If you don't need it, keep it as a souvenir.
For the Apocalypse, 1975. So, this stars Flavio Testi, Lynn Frederick, Michael J. Pollard, Harry Barrett, and an unrecognizable Thomas Millian. Now, Flavio Testi, we know from Contraband. He really has not popped up on this show all that much. I don't know really any other films besides this and Contraband that he's been in, because I don't particularly know him as an actor. I've seen him. When you see him instantaneously, he just goes, oh, he's in a bunch of other films I remember watching, but I just don't remember the titles of the films. Because he's a very striking, you know, rugged, handsome-looking Italian, right? Lynn Frederick, automatically, when I saw her in the film, I popped up to Phase 4. The kind of ant invasion film. Michael J. Pollard, he was on the show a couple years ago. Rented Lips is the most recent film, I think. Or America. Maybe America. America. The Robert Downey Sr. film. And he's always kind of one of these guys who's well known nowadays in the 80s for playing stuff. He was in Scrooged, playing the bum who freezes to death. I can't remember his character's name in that film. He was in Bonnie and Clyde, Tango and Cash, Herman, that's the character's name, and Roxanne, mostly playing kind of like simpleton characters in the 80s. In this film, he plays a drunk named Clem, a pretty bad drunk, no less. And then you have Harry Ballard, who's a black actor who is best known for the Italian Connection. Italian Job. But kind of his career kind of washed up after this film. I don't know if that was mainly because he was in Italy and, you know, this is what happens to American actors. You know, you kind of reach a point in your career in America and you kind of go to Europe to kind of continue working because they're just giving you no roles or they just put you on TV. And sometimes actors didn't want to be on TV in the 60s and 70s. So anyway, this film survives these four people: Stubbs, Bunny, Clem, and is it Bud? Fuck, let me listen. Bud, who are four people who are stuck in a jail in a town. Stubbs has come there to kind of, you know, he's a premier gambler. He's gonna go, you know, wreck house of the casino in town. The local sheriff arrests him before he has a chance to go in the casino because the sheriff knows that the place is gonna get raided and robbed that night. So he decides to put these people in there. You have Bunny, who's a local prostitute, who's got herself knocked up. Clem, who's a constant drunk, who's always in the tank. And Bud, who is a madman. Not a madman, as per se. He's a little fucked in the head. The best way you can tell it. And they survive the night. They get out. He buys a cart and a horse. And he takes his three friends, and they go into the country. And they leave from one town in Utah to this place, another place. So they go through the deserts of Utah in the 1800s, coming across many different people. And what I mean by many different people, you get fucking a very, so like, how does it work? Because I know, like, the thing with this film is, like, it has some of the more brutal scenes in spaghetti westerns that I've seen in a while. And one of the weirdest heartwarming scenes I've ever seen that was created by Fulci. It's like, holy shit, right? And I'll get into that when I want to talk about it. But, like, it's so strange, this film. Like, it's great. I'm not saying it's not good. I'm saying it's great. So they all survive the night. They buy this cart and this thing, and they kind of go off. And they're going to go to Sun City, which is 200 miles away from where they are. As they go along, they meet with these Quakers who think that Stubbs and Bunny are a pair because Bunny is an unwed mother. And, you know, when you got the Quakers, fuck no, you don't want to fuck with them. So Bunny and Stubbs kind of take it on as, oh, yes, we're husband and wife. And they pass them. They meet this, Bunny's birthday happens. And they're catching fish and kind of trying to have a, you know, and Stubbs the whole time is trying to keep the morale up on the crew. They catch fish and they're cooking and they're trying to enjoy themselves. And this guy shoots their, you know, their little like rinky fucking, you know, skewer set to cook the fish. This is Chaco. Chaco is he says he's a gunfighter. But he kind of invites himself. He's a wanderer, kind of invites himself on the crew. And as he's doing this, these four men kind of go and attack them a couple of days later. He goes and, you know, he's able to kill the two, but he keeps one of them alive. And Stubbs finds out that they may have been hunting down Chaco because the guy he's kept alive was a sheriff of another town. And Chaco is very vicious about this. He slices the man's chest with a knife, and then he takes his sheriff badge and the pin part and jams it deep into his chest, into his heart, watching the man die. With a gleeful smile on his face. After this, he feeds everyone peyote, but Stubbs is able to kind of spit most of it out before it actually takes effect, and feeding them liquor, you know. Realizing that Clem is a hardcore drunk, tells Clem, hey, if you want the rest of the bottle, you gotta tie up your friends while they're all fucked up. And he does, because he's a piece of shit, drunk. And Chaco, before he gets his last parting words, he decides to rape Bunny in front of everybody. And this is when you start to realize that Stubbs may have a thing for Bunny. He isn't able to kind of spit it out, but he definitely has a kind of thing for her. They're able to get free after Clem wakes up from his drunken stupor. And kind of Chaco kind of, like, you know, realizes that there's something that that Stubbs has a thing for Bunny, kind of, you know, pretty much puts the, you know, Stubbs out his cock, if you mean, you know what I mean, like, it just really kicks and just crushes into his penis about the whole thing about him being, you know, oh, you're in love with this woman, oh, it's like, okay, and you're like, fuck, okay. All the while, they kind of get free, and they kind of start going back to doing things. Chaco has stolen their, you know, all their stuff in their cart and their horse. And Chaco kind of gets two men. They start coming. They start kind of, you know, tailing them, trying to figure out where they're going. And Stubbs kind of, you know, vows vengeance on Chaco. Trying to think. They come across a caravan of Bible folks who Chaco, in between all this, kind of kills a bunch and kind of melees them. And they were able to get free, but Michael J. Pogg's character gets shot. And they end up in this ghost town during a heavy rainstorm. And they try to save Clem as best they can, but they can't. And the, you know, the kind of the horror and the fucking shit that has been going on has kind of forced Bud to be even more, you know, out there than he already is, because he has this thing where he can talk to the dead and he sees the dead all the time. So he's definitely has some kind of PTSD, shell shock kind of thing going on. And this is where we find out that Stubbs and Bunny have a thing for each other, and they progress their love and all this other shit, right? As, you know, they have sex and they kind of continue on. Clem dies from his injuries. They kind of give up on Bud. Bud kind of goes off in the ether. And they kind of, Bunny and Stubbs kind of end up in this prospecting town where there's only men, right? And they're kind of horrified because only death happens in this town. So with a woman who's about to give birth to a child, the town starts to kind of get this new life. And they start making bets on what it's going to be, a boy or a girl. And when the child is actually born, the town actually revives itself. All the men in the town are so elated and happy that this has happened, that the first life, the first birth in this town has actually happened. But Bunny dies in pregnancy, which completely kills Stubbs, completely shocks him, you know, puts him in a horrible place. And he can't take care of this child by himself. But he feels that because he was born in this town, the men of this town could inherit this child. And they do. They all lovingly love this kid. The fact that he was born in this town, the first real life in this town, it reinvigorates them, right? And it's a really cool scene. The whole scene with the kid is so fucking wonderful and heartwarming that I'm amazed that it was fucking shot and co-written and directed by Lucio fucking Fulci, because it's such a weird fucking thing to think about. Because most of the time, he's about, like, fucking just grinding to death. Blah. You know, and if you ever read interviews or listen to interviews, I mean, grouchy fucking piece of shit, right? I love him to death, right? Because he's such a guy who says it like it is, that he pisses off a lot of people, and people are just like, oh, fuck. But everybody's like, that's Fulci. You can't really get mad at him, right? Even after death, he's still pissing people off. And it's such a wonderfully heartwarming scene, because the men start coming into the room where the child's born, and, like, one of them gives a horseshoe for good luck, and another one's like, oh, he's such a beautiful boy. I don't know if I can take my eyes off him. And the kid grabs his little finger. And it's a baby. It's not like a fucking, like, six-month-old. This kid looks like he was just actually born from his mother, like, right then. And handed to fucking, to the actress to fucking pretend that he's actually the baby of this child. Right? And they bring him to the fucking priest in town and say, we want him baptized. And, like, well, you have to give him a name. You can't be unnamed without being baptized. So they all come up with the name Lucky. And they love it. And they get him baptized. And Stubbs says, you know what? You guys have taken such a liking to him. I want you to take care of him. Because he can't do it. He's on the fucking road. He's not. How the hell is he going to do it? Right? So he, and this kind of, the whole thing of him being baptized and getting a name kind of kicks Stubbs out of this depth that he's in after the death of his woman. Right? And you get this really great kind of just this is the last like half hour of the film. You know, he finds Chaco, finds his precious shaving kit that he's kind of now grown like a, I don't know, 10 o'clock shadow. And he kills Chaco's two men, and he pretty much, you know, shoots him, but doesn't kill him, and tells him, you know, and pretty much treats him, you know, not tortures him, but kind of keeps him alive long enough so he can shave his face. And as Chaco's sitting there talking shit and fucking treating him like garbage, he's like, oh, you can tell, take this to your wife. And he shoots him fucking dead. Like, just Chaco reminding him that he raped her. And he just shoots him, like, without a word. And there's no words after this. After Chaco's little insult, Stubbs doesn't say a word. He finishes his shaving. He slices Chaco in the face. Chaco makes this horrible comment. And he just unloads his fucking gun into him. Right? A fucking violent, beautiful way to end the film. Like I said, Fulci was uncredited with the writing of this film, but he is part of the writing crew on it. It was screenplay by Ennio Del Cino, story by him, based on the Lucky Roaring Camp, a story of 1886 story, and The Outcast that broke the poker flat, another 1896 story. The cinematography was by Sergio Salvetti. This is the first time Salvetti and Fulci would work together. And they would work together for a number of times. On the next film we're going to talk on The Psychic, on The Beyond, on Zombie, on City of the Living Dead, some of the classics of Fulci's filmmaking. And we'll continue work after Fulci's death in, you know, stuff like, I think, Puppet Master and a bunch of other really crazy films up until he retired and died, right? And you can see that this was shot with a fucking inch of its life. It's such a good film that it's one of these films where because usually with Fulci, it's kind of 100 miles an hour or 12, right? In this film, it's got this very ebb and flow of nastiness, kind of weird, kind of, you know, group dynamic, running into people as they're kind of get to the next town, harshness, running into nice people. Chaco and his bullshit, the kid being born, it's fucking wonderful, right? It is one of my favorite films of this year that I watched. I have not seen this film in God knows how long, right? Probably when I was a kid, watching all these films, not particularly being into Westerns, and I think this and a couple of the other Italian ones, this is why I mostly like Italian Westerns, because they have this ability to really just fucking do their own thing, right? And try to mock and ape the American idea of what a Western is in their own weird Italian sort of way. All right. Like I said, this film is available on physical demand, on physical disc through Blue Underground. I think there's a Blu-ray out too, but I know there's a DVD. You can get this on Amazon Prime. Be warned though, if you're going to buy this on Prime, rent it. There are two copies on Prime. There is For the Apocalypse and there's The For the Apocalypse. Do not rent The For the Apocalypse, because that is it. Even though it is the better cut, like it's the better looking cut of the film, it's Italian with no subtitles. Makes no fucking sense why that would be on Prime in America. None. You can't even go into your fucking thing and actually add subtitles. You have to watch it in Italian. It's a great cut of the film. Like, it looks fucking fantastic. The one that's the English language one that's on there is a very weird kind of, you know, that was early DVD copies. They have this weird kind of almost kind of like it's a dream effect to it. This kind of smearing all over the fucking thing. Mainly because they probably did not do any restorations on the prints when they got them. Just scanned them in the machines and put them on discs. But the film is fantastic. It's a wonderful, really fun spaghetti western. And because since we've been doing all these westerns here with the other show, I just wanted to do a western. I haven't done a Western on the show for a while. I wanted to do a Western. So, here we go. All right, let's bang out the titles for this film. Dracula in the Provence, a.k.a. the demonic womanizer Constantine Nacosta, or Dracula in Bronza. This film is directed by Fulci. It is written by Pupi Avati, Bruno Carbucci, Mario Alamodino, and Fulci. Story by Fulci. This stars Lando Brazinko, Sylvia Cachti, Rosanna Abraza, Mario Urthi, John Steffrin, Cristiana Lende, blah, 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 blah. Again, Sergio Savetti did the cinematography. The music for these both two films were actually by the normal group of people. Franco Baxi, Flavio Frizzi, and Vince Tempere. Now, what I think is, when I say these films were kind of, because I know, like, this was, For the Apocalypse was released at the beginning of August, and I think Dracula in Provence was released at the end of August. So that's how I know this. I'm looking on IMDb, Wikipedia. So, you know, if I'm wrong, blame Wikipedia. Ludo Bronzoni plays Constantine Nacosta, who is a superstitious businessman who is recently he owns a basketball team and a fucking toothpaste factory. He has recently married a woman strictly for her money and her clout. He is a piece of shit womanizer, you know, kind of ne'er-do-well asshole. When I say superstitious, he pays a hunchback to rub his hump to give him good luck. This is a ongoing gag within Italian films, of the, you know, one of the many kind of superstitions in the Italian countryside, that humpbacks will give you good luck if you rub them. All right, and he's a straight up asshole who treats his coworkers like shit. He constantly is hiring and firing his family members because they're lazy, idiotic morons. And he kind of accidentally goes to, well, it says, they say he goes to, but I think it's Bronza. That's why Dracula and Bronza. But he goes to, like, fucking, you know, he goes to the great, you know, parts of, you know, where Dracula is found to meet with a count to kind of, you know, figure out a business deal. While he's there, the count brings out a bunch of women and a man to have a nice orgy, which, you know, Nacosta is not particularly against. He wakes up the next morning thinking he's next to a woman, and the count's laying there right next to him, freaks him the fuck out. He goes right back home. When he gets home, he realizes that he thinks he's a homosexual, but as his wife falls and scrapes her knee, she tells him to lick the clean the blood off before he gets infected. As he's doing that, he gets this insatiable lust for blood, which he originally thought was, you know, he thought he was a homosexual because he woke up next to a man, but it really, he's a vampire. And his wife finds little bite marks on his neck as a, thinking that it's like a love bites from a woman that he was messing around with when he was in the countryside. And then it becomes this kind of weird film about this guy and his superstitions about being Dracula. You know, wanting to bite people. But where does he want to bite him? On the ass. Mostly very gorgeous women getting bit on the ass. This film is wacky and silly. We talked about my sister-in-law a couple years prior. And that's a sex comedy starring Edwidge Finick, who is a fantastic actress, where she plays two different characters, a straightforward kind of, you know, upper ass kind of lawyer. She's like a judge, and her sex pot sister, who get mistaken for each other because they are twins. And the hilarity that ensues. And if you've never seen Edwidge Finick in the 70s, she was a beautiful woman. She still is a very beautiful woman, but she's like in her 70s now. But in the 70s, when she was in her younger age, she was a fucking knockout. Right? So, you have Lon... What's his name? I can't think of him right now. Lando Brazinko, who, died 2 years ago, sad. who is kind of known. He was in Ben-Hur. He was in Divorce, Italian Style. This is kind of the two films I know him from. I'm looking through his CV if I know anything else. Love and Marriage, which is an interesting Italian film. Mostly Italian-made films. The only kind of film was made in Italy that kind of came to the States like Ben-Hur. He was in another film, another Fulci film called The Eroticist. Or what is it? The Senator Likes Women from 72, which is a film we'll have to do on this show at some point. This is another sex comedy. And he plays this character of this kind of, you know, this staunch jerk-off, pretty much, who, you know, just plays it like it is, tells it like it is. Like, his wife knows why he married her, and he told her, like, I married you just for your money. I mean, I love you and all, but I married you for my money. And he kind of just, he's roaming around, he makes these deals with this count, and, you know, he goes to visit him, and the count is pretty much like, you know, we do what we want to do here, and it's like, we have dinner, and then we have sex, and the sex is, he's brought, like, these four very gorgeous women who are just completely naked, and this one dude who looks really into it, but ain't getting any of it, and, you know, Nacosta kind of jumps right on one of the chicks and starts to go into town. Wakes up the next morning, like I said, with the count. With who he thinks is one of the women, because she's laying on her back. He's, oh, look at her. Look at that back. It's so beautiful. And then the count turns over. He's like, oh, my fucking God. And runs out of the goddamn... Pretty much almost to the point where he could have broke through the wall. Like, how fast he ran out of that place to get back to where he lived. And then when he gets back to his, you know, his business, he pretty much tells his assistant to cancel every contract with the count. Because, fuck, he made me a homo. And it's like, he's so freaked out about waking up next to a man that maybe he had, you know, homosexual sex with him, that he is just losing his fucking mind until he sees his wife. The thing is, it's kind of odd because the copy of the film I watched is so bad that it was kind of hard. It was just a woman he kind of ran across while chasing her. She scrapes her knee and he goes, you know, suck out the blood before he gets infected, which is an odd way to do that because it doesn't actually happen that way. But he does, and he gets this incurable, insatiable loss from blood, and he won't stop sucking on her knee, to the point where she gets pissed at him and kind of kicks him off her and says, oh, what did you do? And starts accusing him of kind of pushes him to the ground and kind of pulls it at his neck and starts fucking with him and notices the bite mark on his neck. And he automatically thinks he's a vampire. So any chance he gets to bite people, he bites them on the ass, which is just like, okay, silly shit, right? There's the comedy. But the film is more about the Italians and their superstitions and how kind of goofy and silly those superstitions really are, right? The whole fact that this guy pays a guy with a hump to kind of roam around and come to him every so many hours so he can rub it, so he continues his fortune, his luck with it. And the fact that this guy's just the guy who really doesn't deserve all the kind of shit he's fallen into, right? Like, there's a scene where one of his cousins falls into one of the vats, the toothpaste vats, and kind of gets his leg all cut up. And he's so tempted to fuck just, while all his workers and people are around, he's so tempted to jump on him and just lick his fucking leg because it's all bloody and fucking gnarly. But he can't. But he won't, because he can't look like a fucking weirdo around these people. Nothing about the Italians. They don't like looking like weirdos around people. You know, even though in the country, not here, because, you know, we get to the States and all hell breaks loose. Fucking who cares? You know, the people who've been here a while forget who they were. And the people who come here off the boat forget that they're in a new country and need to fucking act accordingly. And then they do their own weird little shit that we find completely odd and screwy. And we kind of, you know, throw up our pitchforks and our axes and we chase him out of town because it's like, oh my God, he's a fucking foreigner. Fucking get him out. You know, that kind of shit. But it's a funny little film. Like, I was laughing through a lot of it because this character that he gives us is such a jerk and you don't root for him. And you just want like every bad thing that happens to him to happen to him. And it's a fun way to have this guy just happen and this happened and stuff like that, and the resolve of it is kind of stupid as well, but it works. And having Bruno Carbucci as one of the writers on this film, I can really see that. Bruno Corbucci was mostly known to write comedies. He wrote a handful of comedies for Bud Spencer and Terence Hill. He also directed a couple of them. Wrote the ones that he did with his brother Sergio, who's more well known as a Western director. And you can just see it. You can see the kind of the pacing that this film goes. It's all over the place, but it's fun and kind of off-kilter and weird, and just weird enough that I enjoyed the hell out of it. Not as much as I did for The Apocalypse, but for a comedy in the Italian market, I really enjoyed it, you know. I know that there is a gray market of it. I know that it came out on DVD in Italy with an English dub track on it, but I never got that, and it's now long out of print. So there is a gray market copy of this roaming in the internet, either through torrents or through sites like Red Lust or My Duck Is Dead or World Cinema. Definitely worth your time if you can find it. But there is a YouTube cut of the film in a really bad print, like a third or fourth generation VHS copy, digitized to YouTube with an English dub, which is very good, with either Israeli or Pakistani subtitles on it. I don't know. I don't know the language. I'm being truthful here. But yeah, it's a really interestingly fun little film, because there's just, you know, just things where he kind of comes across where he just wants to insatiate his lust. Like I said, when he bites the one woman on the ass, she's like laying in bed. I think it's one of the posters in the film of the film. He bites her in the ass and she's like, "What the fuck are you doing?" Right? And he's like, "Ah," and he realized the resolution of the film is kind of goofy. Like the way he breaks himself out of it is kind of stupid, but it works for what this film is, because overall the whole film is this goofball stupid comedy. I enjoyed it. I thought it was funny. I thought it was a good time. It's definitely not for the, you know, if you're a guy who's willing to explore Italian comedies and kind of do that kind of stuff, you know, if you're strictly only want to watch horror movies, then you may not want to watch this film. But if you want to expand your mind a little bit, it's definitely worth your time. Okay. With that said, I hope you guys all enjoyed this. I enjoy doing them. It's always a good time. So, if you'd like to leave me any kind of feedback, that would be great at motionpicturemassacre@gmail.com. You already heard the voicemail bumper at the beginning of the show, but I'm going to play it again. 732-639-1435. That is 732-639-1435. I hope if you have a good day with your family, at least. Easter, yes, I know it's a religious holiday. It really isn't anymore. You know, I think, you know, the Catholics kind of take it as the death and resurrection of Christ, which is fine, right? But it's a day to kind of, it's a spring holiday. Usually it's the nicest day of the week. You know, spring slowly comes in like a fucking battle axe, and it's right, and thank God this is like at the end of March, so it's not going to be raining. So it might actually be a really nice day for everyone, which would be great. All right, hopefully it's a nice, warm day, and you can go out and hang out with your family, or who you consider family. You don't have to just be your family. It can be friends. It can be the people you consider family. Have a great day with them, right? As for me, your gracious host, I hope you enjoyed this, and I will be talking to you sooner than later on God knows what other show, or this show in general. I have a bunch of really fun stuff set up in the next couple weeks. So we're going to tackle that and kind of get it all out of the way. But I'm not going to talk about it here. But thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great Easter. Before I shit myself, goodbye.
Hey, Godzilla! It's over! You must forgive! Damn lizard!